Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today, I have a guest that I'm very excited to have on, and his name is Mike Quincy. And he's got a lot of things that we're going to be talking about today, so I'm going to bring him on, like, right away. So, Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Nancy. It makes a change to be on the other end of it.
Yeah, it does. I know how that feels, because when you interviewed me, I thought, oh, man, I'm getting to be interviewed. How cool. You know, so it does make a big difference. But,
oh, yes.
You know, Mike, let's talk a little bit about who Mike is now, because you didn't always do what you do now. So you do have a love for roses, and you also play table tennis, right?
Yeah.
And that keeps you in nice, good shape.
In what?
That keeps you in shape, table tennis does.
Oh, yes, yes. I've been playing for, oh, dear me, something like 50 to 60 years, believe it or not.
I
play in a competitive league in London, and I go up there from the county of Kent where I live. It's a 60-mile journey each way, so I'm very keen. And I play in a fairly good level, and I enjoy it because it's very relaxing in its own way, very good exercise, keeps your reflexes well sharp, which is handy when you're a driver, as I am. And, of course, it takes your mind off other things. You can't really play in a sport and be thinking about other sort of problems or matters. So, yes, table tennis is a great love of mine.
Good. Now, Mike, let's tell the listeners a little bit about what you do now and how you got started, because you said that you found your spiritual path placed in the 70s. So let's
yes.
talk about how that happened for you.
Well, in my sort of early life, if I may term it that, I was never particularly taken by Orthodox religious beliefs. Like a lot of families in my time, on Sundays you were sent off to Sunday school, and of course you heard a lot of references to parts of the Bible, but I, even at that age, was rather curious, and I wanted to ask questions, but I couldn't get the answers. And growing into my teens and then having got married, I got to a stage where I literally became a non-believer in God, believe it is or not. And I wouldn't say I was a devout atheist, but I couldn't find my proper path. And then as time went by, I decided to start seeking for myself. And what really sparked it off was when I read an article in a newspaper about Edgar Cayce. And what interested me immensely was that he mentioned the lost civilizations of Atlantis and Lemuria. And my thought was, if I went back far enough and could find out what people thought in ancient history, perhaps I would get some clues as to what the truth was about the purpose of life and perhaps my role in it. So it really started there, and I found my way to a spiritual group, which I enjoyed very much, through a teacher called Helio Arcanifus. I was with that for a few years, and then I was so keen on it, I opened up my own branch, which I ran successfully. It must have been for about 9 years or something like that, before eventually the society, who were called the Atlantean Society, as it happens, sort of reached the end of their time, and it gradually closed down. So that's the history, which takes me right up into the 70s. In fact, my interest, obviously, in spiritual matters, and particularly UFOs and that type of thing, was very strong, and I carried on with that after my branch closed down. In the meantime, I'd moved into Kent from London, and I met a guy down here who came to give my group a talk once. Anyway, we're very great friends now. And through him, I really started another phase. He used to give talks at a local spiritualist church, and he knew that I gave talks as well, so I got involved in that. Then I worked with him producing a magazine, and I gradually sort of got back into the scenario of trying to help other people find the truth. And that really lasted right through to when I retired from my work at 65 in 1999. And I sort of rather found myself at a loose end then. I obviously had a lot more time on my hands, and I thought, what can I do? And I sort of looked up to Spirit, and I sort of half prayed and said, come on, use me. I've got plenty to offer. I've had a lot of experience. And lo and behold, before not too long, I saw an article on the Tree of the Golden Light website, which my articles or messages are on now. And I was very kindly invited by Bob, who is part of that site, to write articles for them. And that really then led me on to starting the messages. Nancy Tate, who was already working on that site with Bob, is herself a channeler of Saint Germain and many other entities. And one day she phoned me up and she said, I've got Saint Germain here and he wants to speak to you, which was quite a surprise to me. Anyway, the outcome of that was he asked me to sit at my computer each morning ready to take messages, and that he wanted me to become a messenger for the space beings. So I couldn't quite figure out how I was supposed to start that. I was a bit lost, and I sort of left it for a few weeks, and I thought, how do I get started on this? What do I do? And I was on my computer one morning, and as clear as anything, I heard a voice in my head say, remember me. And I knew that it was Saint Germain reminding me that I was supposed to be getting up and doing these messages. So that really started me off. So I thought, right, get in there. I got up at 6 o'clock each morning, sat at my computer nicely refreshed and without any other ideas or real thoughts in my mind. And suddenly it started to come through. The getting started, to me, was the most difficult thing. But after that, it really went very well. So that's it, really, that without adding anything else, brings it up to date.
You know, I'm always finding it curious and fun how certain people get to do channeling. Because, you know, in my opinion, and this is totally my opinion, I mean, people can be trained to channel. However, I truly believe that you are chosen as a channel, not that you're really choosing to be a channel. Is that kind of true in your opinion?
Oh, absolutely, for me, because I had no idea of doing channeling. I wouldn't really have considered myself one that could do it. Although, funnily enough, in the 70s, there was a new group that appeared at an exhibition, the Mind and Body, which they used to have regularly at Earl's Court in London, a very big exhibition hall. I think they were, if I recall correctly, they were called the Power Group. And I went up to their place to see what they did, because I was rather interested. They issued a lot of books that they gave out free at the exhibition, and a lot of their ideas quite appealed to me. Anyway, having gone up to their place, these people had a house that they worked in. I wasn't very keen on what I saw, the way they operated. And I drove home, and I think I got back after about a 4 or 5 hour drive in the early hours of the morning, went to bed, and then after being in bed, it must have only been about a couple of hours, I was suddenly woke up and I was wide awake. And I used to keep a notepad and a pencil in my cupboard beside me, And I knew that I had to get that out and write a message. And I telepathically received a message from someone who signed off at the end, "I am that I am," which I've come to believe perhaps was my higher self. And it told me about this group, and in the middle of it, it made a little poem up. And I know it was them, if I can call them them, rather than me, because at times I was anticipating what they were going to say. And they didn't say what I thought, so I knew it wasn't out of my own mind. And that maybe, going back all those years, was the first time perhaps I realised I might have been able to do something like that. But nothing happened from that time until Nancy Tate gave me this message from Saint Germain. So yes, I agree with you. I've been chosen. Although you may feel that since we come into life with a life contract, of course, unbeknowing to me, I agreed to do that beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with that one too. Now, you totally also believe in ETs and UFOs. Have you seen any yourself personally?
Yes, I've seen quite a number of unidentified objects, but I would say that three of them were most certainly flying saucers, or whatever you might call them. The first one I saw was when I was about 14 in the late 1940s, when in England, I don't know about anywhere else, there was a big saucer flap. They were being seen all over the place. And I was on a train, and I looked out of the window. This was across a bay. We were going along the coast. And in the sky, suddenly something caught my attention. And it was a craft that people see, but not as often as the saucers. It looked like a halo. Didn't appear to be anything in the middle of it. And I saw it moving slightly, and I thought to myself, oh, I wonder if that's a reflection of something on the window from inside the carriage. And then suddenly it went out in a sort of curved motion and then moved very quickly and vanished. So I was quite convinced that I'd seen one. Then my other two that I feel are firm sightings came much, much later after that. I think it must have been in the period that I was working with my group. So we're probably looking at the 70s, 80s. I had a telescope, and I used to occasionally look pointed at the moon, and I enjoyed looking at the different craters. It was a 70 times magnification, so it wasn't really great if you look at it that way. But one evening I was looking at the moon, and I saw a disc go across, as it were, my telescopic view. And I could clearly see that it was like the traditional ones with the little cabin on the top. And obviously, had I not been looking at the moon, I would never have seen it. Because it wasn't a light, it was looked to be a totally physical flying saucer type. Now, the best sighting I had was when I used to go monthly to a meeting with someone who's become a very close friend of mine over the years, and he was a terrific psychic, and he already had contact with the space beings. He used to get messages from them, and what happened was there were three of us that used to meet. He was one of them, and we tried to develop for making contact with the space people. So he used to put us through the notions, as it were, and he would say, right, what have you got? What have you seen? Have you sort of heard anything? So I wouldn't have said at that time that it seemed particularly successful. Anyway, the meetings used to be in the evenings, and they probably ended after 11 o'clock or something like that. And I was on my way home in my car, in a sort of semi-countryfied area. And I turned off the main road and went down this sort of winding hill. And when I got nearer to the bottom, suddenly from behind me, which therefore came into my view through my windscreen as it went over the car, I saw this big circular light, and it was beautiful. It must have been very low because it only seemed to be a few hundred feet over the top of the houses that it eventually went over and disappeared. And it seemed to be going very slow, which was nice, of course, because it meant I had a few seconds to view it. And it was a lovely silvery blue, but the thing that I thought was unusual, and you don't hear of it very often in connection with sightings, is that it seemed to pulse. It was almost as though as it went along, it left a little tiny image of itself behind the saucer. And bearing in mind that I've just come from a meeting where we were trying to contact the space people, I had to feel that they were letting me know, or us know as a group, that we were making contact with them. So that was quite a sighting for me. Since that time, I think that was in 1984, I don't think I've seen anything quite like that, because one has to admit, when you look at the night sky, there's often things moving around, sort of seem to be lights everywhere, but you can't be positive unless they come down very low as to what you're seeing. So I would say that is the total number of sightings I've had.
Mike, do you think that the people that do the channeling have more contact with, you know, like UFOs and things like that, more so than, say, a normal person that has not done any channeling, or at least they're not aware that they have?
Well, I have to think so. If it's a serious contact, I suppose you would expect it to be ongoing, a bit like, say, George Anansky and other people who seem to have had regular contact. But then having said that, you seem to get the one-off very big contacts, say, like Betty and Barney Hill, probably the first couple to have really had such a big amount of publicity about their contact. Yeah, so it's difficult to tell that because you don't always really know what's going on, do you? Although the internet has clearly opened up the pot a bit there. Certainly, that I know personally, I expect you to, that there are a number of other people channeling space beings, and of course they come from different civilizations like the Arcturians, the Pleiadians, Orions, the Andromedans. So, yes. And that's only the ones we know that write in English. I mean, I can't imagine that other countries with foreign languages aren't without their contacts, because the language doesn't make any difference to the space beings, because it's all telepathic contact anyway.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think England has so many different kinds of contacts?
Well, I think it's a country that has a vibration that suits the visitors. We have, I'm sure, proportionate to the size of the country, the most regular crop circles appearing, for example. There's a place in the South Country, called Wiltshire, that is very well known for the number of sightings over many, many years. And in some of the greater saucer flaps going back, they almost happened on a nightly basis. But I think it's got something to do with the vibrations, to be honest. I can't really put my finger on it otherwise.
Why do you think a lot of the governments, Mike, have such a hard time admitting that there's been contact and there's contactees here? Why do they have such a hard time with that?
Well, I think initially they might have genuinely believed that if they admitted to it, it might have caused fear amongst the people. Because even now, there are people who are frightened of the idea of contact with ETs, and I guess that is partly due to the image that's been passed over to represent them as some type of entities that want to take over the earth, that are likely to harm people or abduct them and so forth. But I think in the latter stages, it's merely been to cover up their own activities, because for anybody who's interested in the subject, I'm sure they must know that it was quite a long time ago now that the American government, through one of their presidents, actually met the Greys, and they made an agreement with them so that they could have underground bases in exchange for advanced technology, which they've used.
You know, I've heard that, and a lot of people, they don't seem to want to believe that. But, you know, if you think back in history and you look at the different things that happened, like Roswell and X out, we started getting all different kinds of information that came out like overnight. And so the people who are having a hard time believing that we're the only humans or persons or, you know, person with intelligence living in this whole universe, to me, they really need to get out of that and start to fix, you know, face reality with their thoughts.
Yes. I think there's probably a number of reasons there is this cover-up, and it's been perpetuated. You see, the problem is, the longer you're covering up, the more difficult it is to admit that you've been doing the cover-up, because you may or may not know at this stage that it is strongly rumoured that before the end of the year, Obama will be making an announcement, a worldwide announcement, and officially admitting to the existence of space beings. Now, when you get an official announcement like that, people can't very well deny it, because he can support it with the evidence, official evidence. So I think they've waited all this time and probably now bowed to pressure, because I know, well, I understand Stephen Greer is certainly pressurising Obama to go ahead with that, because he's had the disclosure program ready for many years, and he's got stacks of evidence from very reliable sources that would support the existence of ETs and, of course, their craft, which is an important thing. But I believe in the US, one of their problems has been that they wanted to keep everything to do with UFOs and the technology to themselves. They wanted to become, and probably were, or are, the major world power, and have developed their own craft from the back engineering that they carried out. I mean, it's, I think, I say common knowledge, because I think a lot of people are aware that Area 51 was seemingly the place where the craft were back engineered and where they gained sufficient technology to build their own. So the evidence is there, but I think they've gone so far down this road to trying to keep the knowledge to themselves and not prepared to share it, that they've got a bit of a problem when the truth comes out.
I think they have a big problem when the truth comes out. You know, I got the email that Obama is going to make this announcement. And I'm very curious, Mike, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but I'm very curious as why they have waited until Obama came in order to really want to move forward with the announcement.
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with Obama himself. I personally, and I know other people do, believe that Obama was the spiritual choice, if you like, to be president. If the Illuminati, that is the dark forces, had their way, Hillary Clinton would have been the one who became president, and therefore you would have had the status quo with the same crowd, if you like, running the world, as you did with George Bush Jr., Sr., and so forth. The presidents in the past have been, well, for some time, have been mainly the puppets of the Illuminati, and they've simply done what they've been told. Obama has come in, and although a lot of people feel he hasn't really performed yet, I think the guy is just waiting for the right opportunities, and I'm sure he has himself been pushing to release this information. I mean, other presidents like JF Kennedy wanted to do it, and there is a feeling that that was maybe part of the reason why they got rid of him, because they didn't want that information to be released. Carter also wanted to release the information because he had had a sighting himself. So he was quite convinced of their reality. But I think Obama, I'm sure, has been contacted by the space beings, and hopefully he's fully protected by them, because there have already been attempts on his life, which have been unsuccessful, obviously. So I think he is chosen to start a new era in the world, and I think once it starts, the changes that really go hand in hand with the ascension that we're looking forward to in at the end of 2012 will take off like a rocket. I think it's just waiting for one action like this to really get it going, and I'm sure people will then see how good and how well Obama will fit that role.
Let's hope, because it's time that all the information get exposed. I mean, there are so many people out there who know about it already, and it would help, I think, the world for everybody to come together and say, yes, this is going on. It has been going on before we were ever here, and they are here, and they will stay here. You know, I think yes. People need to be told that. I have another question for you, right, Mike. For these children, and, you know, this is a thing of mine because I'm trying to do my school, but for these children that are here, the ones that have been diagnosed with ADD, ADHD, and been given, you know, the Ritalin and all that stuff, how yeah. bad or how good do you think that is for the children, the Ritalin and all of that?
What, so you give them drugs, you mean?
Yes.
Oh, well, I think it's very bad in the long run, if not the short term, because it, as far as I can make out, having read people's experiences that have been on Valium for any period of time, it tends to turn them into like sort of zombies. And some people, as happens with many drugs, have a very adverse effect. And I even read of a woman who nearly died from being on Valium. So I don't think that's a good thing at all. But you see, there is a thought that there is a conspiracy here to dose people up with drugs to sort of keep them in their place, as it were, to dumb them down. The pharmaceutical yeah. companies are very powerful, and of course, it's like this swine flu epidemic. They're making a lot of money out of the vaccines, but when the Illuminati are involved, there is also some ulterior motive as well. And it is said by someone who examined one of the drug manufacturers' vaccine that it actually contains the very I can't think of the word for it now, but it contains H1N1, which actually causes the swine flu, and this is a deliberate thing to spread it. And apparently, according to Dr. Horowitz, it's not the first time that things like that have been manufactured in the U.S. laboratories for that type of reason.
Yeah, and I have a real problem with all the medication that they give out to people, and the swine flu is one of them. But anyway, now there's also many different kind of children here now. You know, there are star children, crystal children, indigo children. Do you think that these children that are here and that are coming and are going to keep coming are here actually to help put this planet back in order and balance it out the way it should be?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I think we've been getting these higher souls with a lot of wisdom for quite a long time now. And you started off by mentioning ADD, and I have to think that sometimes this attention deficiency is because these children are old souls and they know the truth, and when they're taught something different, it, I guess, upsets them. They get bored, perhaps, when they're being taught things that they know are incorrect, and they also get very frustrated because they know really what should be done. And I suppose being children in particular, or even younger people, grown-ups don't take too much notice of them. But one has to say that as the door opens to ascension, then I think they will come into their own, and people will begin to listen to what they've got to say. There's some very wise souls there.
Yeah, I think they actually came here to help us to learn as adults, because we've made a lot of horrible, horrible mistakes, but it's all part of growth. And I think the children are actually here to help us understand it's part of growth, and they are going to help as much as they can. So
yes,
to me, the children are so important. And again, that's why I'm trying to do what I'm trying to do down here in New Mexico. Now, I want to ask you another question, Mike, and it's up to you again if you'd like to answer this, but there is a group. It's called Nisara.
Yes.
And I know that you talk about it, but there are not, well, I should say that, there are many people that do not know what Nisara is all about. Would you feel comfortable explaining it?
Well, I'll do my best. This is certainly what I've gleaned from reading about the subject and have read what spirit have got to say through various channelings. Nisara goes back, I don't know the date now, to a time when I think Bill Clinton was the president, and it related to the experiences of the farmers when they were having their lands taken away from them. It was sort of like a repercussion in a way to prevent that sort of thing happening again. And they drew up these whole series of acts which allegedly were put through Congress, but they were never put into action, shall we say. And basically what they promised, and this information came out through sources like Sheldon Neidel, through his space people, and through mine at times, and others, of course, was that it would totally alter and change the way the financial system works. Well, I mean, with what has been happening in all of our countries now, with the credit problems, the troubles with the banks, etc., bankruptcy, one has to think that the time of change is happening right here now before our very eyes. With it, there was going to be abundance with a program that would release a new money system which would be backed by precious metals. Allegedly, and I tend to believe this, Saint Germain, in one of his incarnations, started a World Trust Fund, I think in the 1700s, which was earmarked to be used in this particular period of time. I know that probably takes a lot of believing in some people's minds, but nothing is impossible where spirits are concerned. And it was also going to restore the Constitution, which is clearly a very important thing in light of what's been happening over the years, because it's been watered down and people's rights have been taken from them. And regrettably, they haven't been able to do a lot about it. And in fact, I guess not too many of them have actually noticed it. So that is obviously a very key feature to restore the Constitution and people's rights, restore their freedom, their sovereignty. And I think those were really the key issues in Nisara. Now, Nisara as a name, to my mind, isn't quite as evident now as it used to be. And some of the space being said that the benefits of Nisara were being incorporated in their own plans. So you could say that with the announcement that Obama is going to make, and I put it that way positively because I think it will occur, that it may be the opening of this door to all these changes that we've been promised. Certainly there's going to be a totally new banking system. The way it works with a central bank is, shall I say, wrong, because what our country here in Great Britain is doing and what you're doing in the States is you're buying your money from a private bank and then having to pay it back with interest. And the question's even been raised in England before with our government, as to say, why don't you print your own? Why do you buy it from somebody else and have to pay interest? Of course, I mean, it's us, the people, that are paying the interest. But one never gets an answer. And in fact, I saw Mark, what's his name now? Hold on a minute. I'll mention his name because people might want to look him up and get some more information. Mark Cocking, C-O-C-K-I-N-G. I saw him on television talking about the very subject, and he explained it in a very simple way, which for the first time made me realise how bad this monetary system is. So that's as much as I can say without any specific questions about Nasara.
From what I understand, because one of my friends is very much into Nasara and has been for a long time, so from what I understand, because it's never really been explained to me, she just said that, you know, you'll be part of the gifting and things like that.
Yeah.
So my take on it is that when truth actually starts to come out, which is going to happen no matter what, people will finally understand that just in the United States alone, there is enough excess money to pay off everything and anything so somebody could actually have a house, say, that's worth $260,000 to be totally paid for. And so if that's the case, and people know that this is all going on, why has it taken it so long, or what is taking it so long for Nasara to actually come out and let everybody know about what they're trying to do and how they're going to do it?
I don't really know the answer to that one, but I would suspect that there has to be a right time when they can release the prosperity funds, because the Illuminati mainly comprises of the big banking families, like the Rothschilds and so forth. So one could imagine that if you had large amounts of money, and we could be talking of trillions of dollars, say being put into different banks for distribution, a lot of it might disappear through corrupt practices. So I wouldn't think they would consider it a safe time until perhaps we put the banks in their place and put this new financial system into place. And even then, I gather that when the monies are issued, they will go to people for special projects to help raise the standards in the world, because there are a lot of people that lack the basic things in life, and I'd like to think myself that one of the first priorities will be to help the most needy first. I don't think it's really a question of issuing everybody, say, with an allowance, if you like to look at it that way. I mean, that wouldn't be necessary anyway, although I have read sources that do feel that eventually we will all have more than adequate money. So I don't know. That's my thoughts about it.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, Mike, I'd like to know, in some of the channelings that you have done, because I've not really had the opportunity to read all of them or look at them, and I would think in some of the channelings that are coming, are they explaining to the people who are aware, we'll put it that way, or awake, whichever word you like to choose, that, you know, we're trying to do our best to wake everybody else up, but it's still going to take some time to do that. And will it take the entire system failing in order for most people who are not awake to get awake?
I guess in the end, there will be people that will only awake when there seems to be some dire situation facing them. You see, even now I would think that people that don't have spiritual awareness are probably living their lives in a certain degree of fear. They're wondering what on earth the future holds for them, if anything at all. And maybe that's the reason why a lot of younger people seem to go off the rails. Maybe they see no future at all. Little chance of jobs, little chance of medical care, little chance of getting a pension in their old life. So, yes, I think you're probably right, because people like myself and you, who have a spiritual understanding, we can get through these periods because we've got faith in the Creator and faith in His workers, whether they're space people or the allies, as they refer to them, on the Earth, are working for the same ends.
On your channelings, have they told you what? Here, I'll ask it a different way. Is there anything that has come through in your channeling that you have not actually made public yet?
No, nothing at all. I don't get any, as you might say, private consultations. Everything I get is in the hour and a half that I spend taking the message and typing it straight onto my computer. I mean, I like to think at times that I talk to my contacts, but I don't really hear replies in my head which would make me feel that they are speaking to me in that way. It's a funny situation, really. I believe I'm intuitive, and I probably have a good link with my higher self. So I feel at times I'm getting advice, but then we all have guides as well, you see. So it's difficult to say, but no, I don't have any sort of private information at all, no.
On your channelings, I've read a couple of them, and they talk about the future, how it's going to turn out, or at least what's to come.
Yeah.
Do you think, Mike, that a lot of people without the knowledge of the spirituality that you're talking about, as all these changes start to happen, will at that time have to choose if they would like to stay and grow or if they would just like to go?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, it might not be a conscious choice. They might not directly be faced with that. But if you, say, were an average person who didn't really have, say, a belief in God, and you just worked day to day, you didn't really believe there was anything after death, etc., you may well carry on that way, even when you hear from reliable sources that we are approaching a period when there's an opportunity to ascend. Because I think literally it won't interest some people. It's a funny thing to say, because the idea of ascension is clearly so appealing. I mean, you think to yourself, who on earth wouldn't want to ascend? But if they're not ready, that's it. They'll feel comfortable still in the third dimension in spite of its drawbacks, and maybe in some cases they would even fear what ascension would mean to them. So yes, I think they have to make a choice, whether it's knowingly or otherwise. Yes, I think so.
As the systems start to fail, Mike, and they all will fail in order to make them actually be regrouped and put back together correctly so we can get back to our aspiration, do you foresee a lot of panic, fear, and people just kind of like really just freaking out as all these changes are going to be going on?
If it's handled the right way, I don't think so. Let's say that Obama, even if he only confirms that there are ETs and that we've had contact with them, we the people, and also particularly the governments, because it is alleged that every president of the United States for quite a long time has been visited by them, and they've offered to help making peace in the world, but each time they've been turned down. So yes, I think some people will fear, and that may be because of their religious upbringing, of course, because some people believe that the space people are actually devils pretending to be helpful beings. Well, it's a sad thing to my mind, but yes, I think you're possibly right. But as I said, if it's handled the correct way, I can't really see any problems, because it won't all come down on people in one sort of big shower of changes. First of all, it's got to be indicated the path that we're going to take, that is to restore the earth itself, get rid of all the nasty pollution and things like that, and help people to move forward with their spiritual understanding. So I think the space beings have probably got the most meticulous plan to move us forward with the least amount of disturbance as possible.
That would be interesting to watch, because I think there's going to be a lot of people who kind of like get really strange and weirded out because they just aren't where they need to be at the moment.
Well, Nancy, can I just add to that, obviously, once the announcement has been made and the space beings are allowed to use our media, which includes television and any other sources where they can get their message out, I don't think it will take them very long to reassure people that they come in peace, and the reasons they are here, which are totally to help humanity. So, and I think people will take to them, and they will see also that they're not some monstrous looking beings. Quite a lot of the space beings are very human looking, like we are. So I think they'll feel quite comfortable. So I'd like to just add those few points there.
There's going to be a new series that starts here in the United States. I think it's next. I think it's on November 2nd or 3rd. It's on a Tuesday night. It's called Z, and it's for visitors or something like that. It just has showed the little clips, and it actually shows what the movie is about. It's about the spaceship actually coming, people here on Earth starting to accept the fact that they're there. And the advertisements are where we trust them and we know them and things like that. And I find it really interesting that a lot of the series on TV, and I don't really watch TV very often, but a lot of the series are now all leaning toward, you know, contact with, you know, UFOs, ETs, and actually, you know, starting to help the flow, whether people believe it or not. And so, I mean, I'm kind of wanting to see at least part of that show to see how they start to, you know, show that and see how people respond to that, because I think that would be pretty interesting. And it'll kind of be a way of saying how a lot of people may accept it or not accept it, because I think a lot of people are very interested in knowing that, yes, there are UFOs, yes, they've been here for a while, and now what are we going to do about it? So I think people are going to start to really wake up a lot more between 2010 and 2012, because they're not going to really have, well, they do have a choice, but I don't think they'll have too much of a choice not to. It will be their choice, but it will all be unfolded and be told to them. And I think that's very important.
Absolutely, and if you look back, it's not only the dark forces that have a plan to enslave Earth, it is the spiritual forces that have a plan to release the Earth and acquaint them with space beings and the differences between our civilizations and theirs, primarily through the Star Trek series. The guy who wrote that, Roddenberry, he was inspired, and I think he was even in contact with space beings, to present a series of programs which were excellent to put over this idea that we can have humanoid people that look a bit different to us, but they're not that different. And of course, it was very futuristic in its ideas about spaceships and the technology, you know, this idea of beaming people up. I mean, that is an actual fact. They can beam you into their ships. So it was really putting the ideas into people's minds so that when it became a fact, it wouldn't really mean a lot to them, because they would think, oh, I already know about that. So, no, they've been preparing us for this occasion for a long time.
You know what I find interesting, Mike, is when I research people, historic figures who have been, if they were alive today, and the ones that are alive today, would actually be diagnosed with ADD, ADHD. But a lot of those are the ones who have created a lot of all of this futuristic stuff. Even Walt Disney himself had some cartoons at a very early stage but it was cartoons, so people just kind of laughed at it, never really questioned it. And then Orson Welles came out with his radio program, The Day That First Stood Still. You know, so all of these people that have been researched that they would say have ADD, ADHD, in my opinion, have had high contacts almost their entire life.
Yes.
Would that be possible, do you think?
Yes, I think so. Because you're mentioning Orson Welles, presumably you're going back to that radio program, aren't you, when they spoke or they were acting out an imaginary Martian invasion, which I suppose did genuinely frighten people because they thought it was actually the news. And they always refer back to that when they give a reason for not admitting that the space people are here. But I think that's worn out, really. It's not a valid reason at all any longer, I don't feel.
Michael, is there a website or email address that you can give out in case people would like to get a hold of you somehow?
Yes, if you want to read my messages, I have web pages on a site which is by courtesy of the owners, Nancy Tate and Bob T. It's and this is all written as one word in lowercase letters, Tree of the Golden Light. I think that's quite clear. And it's www.treeofthegoldenlight.com. And when you go onto that site, in the left-hand column on the home page, there is a button for first contact. If you click on that, it'll take you to my web page, and then you can find a section for the channeled messages. They actually exist on many websites now, but that is my own one, as I call it, yes.
Now, you also do a radio show right here on BBS. Do you want to give out the day and time for that?
Absolutely, yes. Thank you, Nancy. It's kind of you. My program goes out every Friday at 2 p.m. PST, and that's it, isn't it, basically? That's the time, and that's the day of the week, and it goes out every Friday. And I tend
Pardon? Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say that I tend to have so many guests to select from, that I'm very lucky to be able to pick those that I obviously enjoy speaking with, that maybe more often than not I have a little bit of knowledge so that we can have some good discussions. And I think I had some really super guests, and you were one of them.
And I thank you.
Yes,
I have another question. I have another question for you, Michael. Do you think that there are ETs walking the earth now and intermingling with the human species as we speak?
Oh, absolutely, yes. There's this famous story, and I believe it was true, that for a long time, going back to, I don't know, it must have been the 50s, I think, there was a Venusian, and they are very, very much like humans, same height, build, everything else, who was for a long time in the United Nations. Can't think of his name now. He had an unusual name, like Vaults or something. But that apart, some of them would pass looking like humans. Yes, they definitely would. I mean, some of them. Sorry?
Did they call them the are they known as the hybrids?
No. No, these are pure humanoids from, well, planets like Venus, which I've mentioned. The Sirians, the Pleiadians are very much like us. Yes, and of course, there would be others that are simply incarnated on the Earth. I mean, I'm talking to you about those that have come down on the Earth and haven't incarnated. They're around for other purposes. There's some wonderful stories about what they do. I mean, they've even been seen walking around in the White House, and when they've been challenged by the guards there and they don't take any notice, they shoot at them and the bullet just goes straight through them. In other words, they are more of an etheric form, and they've been seen walking through doors, and it is alleged that they've walked straight into the president's office and had a word with him. So, yes, I'd say they're definitely around, yes. And consequently, may I say, although they can do it with their technology from the crafts they have, they also know everything that's being planned on the Earth. The dark forces may hide in their underground bases a couple of hundred miles under the Earth, but that doesn't stop the space people from tapping into what they're doing. So there we are.
That only makes it better, makes it fair.
Yes. Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, why should they have it all one way? The only difference is, obviously, that the dark forces can do what they like. They can disobey universal law. They can be as nasty as they like. But the light workers work by spiritual laws, and obviously you don't respond in that way. You don't meet aggression with aggression. Light workers meet it with light and love. So, yeah.
Which is the best way to do it anyway. Now, they have a lot of articles out there, Mike, that talk about Planet X that is coming closer to our Earth. Can you, because we only have like about 10 minutes left, unfortunately, but can you talk a little bit about that if you know about it?
Well, I can only tell you my own conclusions based on what I've read, and that could be through other people's research, or often it's through channeled messages. Now, there is a difference of opinion about this planet, which is called Nibiru, and it's one that comes into the solar system every 3,500 years, and strangely enough, the Sumerians used to know of this cycle of appearance, and they actually built a temple with a flat surface called the Temple of Jupiter where the craft of the Nibiruans could land. Now, I know I'm talking about the Nibiruans now, but there's an interesting little point here apart from the planet, is that they presented themselves originally as gods, and I call them the lesser gods. And obviously you can imagine in those times, we're looking at something like in the Sumerian times, 6,000 years ago, they thought they were gods. I mean, everything about them was miraculous, what they could do and so forth. And the people used to work under them. They treated them like kings and queens. And it is they that, for a great part, have laid down their mark on the earth, and you read in the Old Testament of gods that send their people to war against other ones and tell them to kill them and all this type of thing, sounding very ungodly indeed. And I would say a lot of that is relating to the Nibiruan times. Anyway, the planet itself apparently is of enormous size, and it's supposed to have been a hollowed out war planet that the Nibiruans took over, and appears to be many mixed civilizations on board it. And it has been said that they are now in this planet, Planet X or Nibiru, stationed behind the sun. And that means that as we move around the sun, they also move around it, and we never actually get to see them, and that in the coming period of changes, they will actually reveal themselves. So that's the main core of what I know. They were associated sometimes with disturbances and such things on the Earth, like the coming of that planet. It wasn't viewed with a great deal of joy at one time. But again, that may go back to the Sumerian experiences. It often happens that these ETs that have visited the Earth, when they come for, say, their own purposes, often in so doing, they do help humanity to evolve, because obviously they're bringing in ideas, maybe to allow them to know how to operate agricultural farms and things. They give them ideas of how to tap water sources. So although they may be there for ulterior motives, they've often imparted quite some knowledge. And when you think about, I'm sorry to get off the subject slightly, the Nibiruans, but the Greys, although the government, US government, allowed them to be on the earth in the underground bases in exchange for advanced technology, that has eased its way through from the military sources into life. The laser, the chip, Teflon coatings apparently, and things such as that have all come from that advanced technology. So without it, it's strangely enough, we would have been a lot further behind. That's really all I can just say straight off the cuff about Nibiru, Nancy.
Yeah, I've heard from some of the other people that I've interviewed, when they talk about the planet, they kind of agree with you that it has created some disturbances. And one of their things, one of their thoughts was that as Nibiru gets closer to Earth, it's going to actually tilt the Earth more, and that will also create a lot of the Earth changes that, you know, people know are coming, and will help, you know, somehow clean this planet, the planet Earth, the way it needs to be cleaned, just by what the outcome is. And then other people have said, well, you know, their vision of it is that it's going to be not collided into our planet, but kind of put on top of our planet, so that the ascended ones will actually go to that one, the Nibiru, and then the rest who don't really want to ascend will stay here on Earth, and whatever happens, happens. So, you know, I've heard a lot of different stories about, you know, and I call it Planet X because most people know Planet X. They don't know Nibiru. But I was just curious about that, with your kind of take on it, because I, you know, I like to get a variety of different information from everybody.
Of course.
The other thing, that the Hopi, go ahead.
I was saying, did you just want me to quickly reply to those observations you've made? Because I don't think either of those are applicable. The Galactic Federation are in charge of the changes on the Earth, and I can't for the life of me see that Nibiru would have anything at all to do with it. I mean, the changes are purposely carried out to a plan, whereas one imagines that if Nibiru was over the Earth, the changes would be some interchange between the magnetic pull, gravity or whatever, and I wonder if they would be controlled in any way at all. So no, I don't really see that myself.
Okay, because I just, you know, I ask because there are a lot of different, you know, answers that people are taking, you know, in their beliefs, and I, so I'm like a sponge. I want to know all of them.
Yes,
that's why I ask. You know,
I was going to say, well, that's how we learn, isn't it? It would be silly to, as they say, throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's worth listening to all these different views, and then you take from it really what you want and what resonates with you.
Mm-hmm. And again, it's real important because most people kind of have their own take on what's to come, like for 2012. You know, and my angels have always told me 2010. And so it's like I'm looking forward to 2010 to find out what my angels tell me that, you know, seems so important that from childhood they told me 2010, not 2012. But I'm curious with that one. So it should be interesting, I think, with 2010 to 2012 coming in.
Yes, I have, it's possibly the same reason I've read that some people think it is 2010 because they say that our time, linear time, is different now, that because time speeded up, the event of 2012 will come earlier, but I don't think that's the case. I think the event still fits the time, if you follow me, not the other way around. We can't exceed it or make it come earlier. It's going to be 2012 because that's how it's set up. So,
it's going to be really interesting during these next probably 5 to 10 years, no matter whether it's 10, 12, 15, 17, whatever. I think it's going to be very, very interesting time to be on the planet and, you know, see what's really going to be going on. I'm just, like, looking forward to all of that.
Oh, absolutely. You see, obviously, and you know this, but some people don't realize, I think, that 2012 is purely one part in the process of ascension. It's a major upliftment, but of course you're still evolving and ascending, if that's the right word, after 2012 the whole time. So it isn't one step and then that's the end and there's no further progress, but it's a very big step that's coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people are afraid that it's all going to happen like overnight in a 24-hour period. The Earth is going to be gone, and I tell people, no, that's not the way this is going to be, you know.
Right.
And you just have to relax and just kind of go with it and just see. But it's not going to, like, all of a sudden the Earth is going to explode in 24 hours. It doesn't work like that, because this has been planned over thousands of years, not just the last, you know, 5-6 years when people start talking about 2012. You know, so it's pretty interesting. It's a very interesting time to come in. I really can't wait, like I said.
No, I agree.
The Hopis are very, very much into their belief about 2012 and UFOs. And I think their own thoughts and their own beliefs are also very, very important with speaking of a lot of things yet to come. Because the Hopis have, you know, a lot of, for a long, long time, talking about all of these things that are going to be going on. And so I look at some of their prophecies and find them to be quite interesting. Have you looked at theirs?
I've read of them over a period of time. I couldn't bring them to mind, except I know I do relate to them very favorably. I think they call Nibiru, do they call it the Blue Star? I know they have this expectation of a star coming into the solar system, which is beneficial. Of course, you see, the American Red Indians were visited by the space people. They are familiar with them, and I think that knowledge of the contacts is still held by the elders of the different tribes.
They seem to be very interesting in some of their prophecies, and I really like listening to what they have to say. I may not agree with all of them, but I find it very interesting with their knowledge and their ancient beliefs, which are kind of cool.
Oh, yes.
The other thing, Mike, now, you have not been abducted. Is that true or not true?
Oh, I have not. No, absolutely not. Whether I've been on their craft is a different matter, in as much that everybody goes out of their body at night, even if it's only to hover over their physical body. I don't know where I go when I go out of the body at night, but since I have this contact with ETs, it would be rather strange, I would have thought, if I didn't end up in their company and on board their craft. But I never have a waking memory of where I've been or what I've done. And I've got a very good psychic friend who often gives me information, but they will tell me very, very little. So I'm in the dark about that.
Maybe they're just saving it for one big time for you. You never know.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. But I have been told I am a space being, but then you see, I don't see that as being anything unusual, because I think there's a lot of us here. I mean, you have to think, Sheldon Neidl, I think he said he is a Pleiadian who's come to the Earth to work with the Pleiadians and other civilizations. So, I think there's more around than we possibly guess.
No, I think there's a whole bunch more around. Everybody's always curious, Mike, about the lost city of Atlantis. Do you think it's ever going to reappear, or they're really going to be able to pinpoint where it is? I mean, there's all kinds of speculations where they think it is.
Well, personally, I think that there is no doubt at all that the story that Plato got from the Egyptian priests was accurate. People have tried to put it in other places other than in the Atlantic, but I don't think that works. They've even altered the sizes of the island that were given by Plato to do that. And I think the Azores and other islands are actually the tip of the mountains of the area that Atlantis is in. And, you know, there were ships doing some sort of survey of the bed of the Atlantic, and they found some evidence of, like, columns down there and things like that, clearly suggesting that there were some remains there, some sort of buildings or the likes. I don't mean to say they found a broken-up city laying on the seabed, but there were things down there that possibly could act as proof that that is the place of Atlantis. I can't believe it can be anywhere else, to be quite honest with you.
I find it interesting. The other thing I find really interesting is the Devil's Triangle. There's a lot of people, you know, Bermuda Triangle, there's a lot of people who come up with all their theories, but even their theories have not necessarily been proven to be correct. So do you have any information about the Bermuda Triangle and maybe an ET connection with that?
Well, again, I can only tell you what I've heard or read, and certain things resonate with me. For example, in the 50s, there was a group that were in touch with the space beings who, for a period of time, this was in England, got some extremely good messages, and I would sort of stake my life on the truthfulness of them. And when they were asked about the Bermuda Triangle, they said that what happens there is due to a time warp. And this is why some ships or planes or whatever disappear. They actually end up in a slightly different dimension. And there is a well-known story about the six aircraft, I think they were fighter craft, that disappeared on a mission. And where they were in touch with their base, apparently some of their last words were conveniently covered up. But before they disappeared, the leader of this group was reporting that the whole plane was starting to shimmer and was like just going into pieces. I mean, not physically falling into pieces, but it was beginning to disappear before his very eyes. And then, of course, that was the end of the transmission. So I have to think to myself that that one bit of evidence alone suggests that there is some sort of dimensional change there. But there are other people who believe that there is a big pyramid in the sea, on the seabed, in that area, and that it is still transmitting some sort of energy that causes it. So, yeah, that they would fit in with my possible beliefs, but certainly more the fact that there's a time warp there.
I tend to think that there is definite some kind of time warp in a different dimension there. You know, then my thought is, if that is, then these people who have disappeared and everything that has disappeared have to be someplace.
Yes. And I think it is known that some have made contact through people on the Earth and said that they're safe and sound on the other side. You see, when you think about it, if this is your belief, if you believe that when we die on the Earth, we have an etheric twin, if you like, another model of ourselves that leaves the physical body behind and then goes into the slightly higher dimensions, logically thinking, it wouldn't matter how you lose your physical body, that astral version of you would then move to those dimensions. Because you've died, haven't you, by losing your physical body?
Right.
I was going to say, have read, though, that this again is through people that have been that have managed to give information back to us, that they've been removed from their craft, or even they and their craft have actually been taken into spaceships. In effect, they've been rescued. And just on that count, I have to say there's a strong feeling that when that shuttle exploded, that the astronauts on board never died on board. They were taken off before that happened.
influence. Yeah, and I agree with that too.
Yeah.
The other thing, when we talk about religion, I know I'm probably going to upset a lot of people, but I just have to say, I find it very hard to believe that the Bible, the way it has been rewritten and rewritten, really is stating the truth. My thought has always been that the star that the, quote, three wise men saw was probably a starship from another planet that had crashed, and for that survive to come out would be what we now know as Jesus, God, whatever words they want to choose. Do you think that might have been feasible?
Oh, absolutely, yes. There's a lot of mythology, unfortunately, placed around the birth, the life, and the death of Jesus. I think a lot of these things are false, unfortunately. They had to make Jesus into something different to a normal human, so they gave him all these different attributes or miraculous things that happened around him to make him special. For example, Christians celebrate the birth in the manger, but apparently that isn't how he was actually born. He wasn't born in a manger, in a cowshed. But if that pleases people and that's the way they celebrate his birth, I say fine, sort of carry on. But there will come a time in the very near future when the truth about these things will come out. And I don't suppose many people realise that when the Bible was put together, it was done by a pope in somewhere, I can't remember the exact date now, about 300 AD, that many, many years after the death of Jesus. And what he did, he called a meeting of the most knowledgeable people from many, many countries, and he got them to write down for his use a lot of their religious beliefs. And evidently, from that, he selected what should go into our Bible. And this can be confirmed in as much that the birth in the manger also appears in another religion, far removed from Christianity, and so do some of the other high points. Now that is provable, you know, that the Pope who set the Bible up did this. I mean, they were meetings that were recorded, and the names of people, some of the names of the people at the meetings are there in records. So if you look at it that way and think that it was a conglomeration of different people's beliefs, then I sort of regret to say that people who claim that the Bible is the Word of God are really misguided. I would have much more faith in the New Testament. I think mainly of the Old Testament. It's more of a history book rather than the Word of God. But having said that, I think in the New Testament, some of these apostles or whatever were, say, like modern days, they were overshadowed or influenced when they came to write out these stories about Jesus. So there's a lot more credibility, I think, in the New Testament.
Especially the last part of it. Do you, Mike, do you think that everybody has psychic ability?
As a what? Sorry, Nancy, I didn't catch your last word. Repeat the question.
I said, do you think that everyone has psychic abilities?
Oh, right. I think they have the potential, if they would care to develop it. Yes, I do. I think things happen in life that you wouldn't consider were due to your psychic ability. You just say, oh, that was a coincidence, or that was funny, or how did that happen? Yes, I suppose it happens so infrequently, these unusual occurrences, that people don't for one minute think they're psychic. But it's simple things like often used to happen to me. I used to be at home and think, oh, I'll give my mother a ring. And just as I went to go to the phone, it would ring and my mother was on the phone. So, I think there's some psychic energy passes between the two of you. Presumably in that case, it was my mother. She thought, oh, I'll ring my son. And I picked that up and I thought it was me thinking I ought to ring her, you see. So I think you can get things like that perhaps happen to a lot of people, and they wouldn't put it down to sort of psychic senses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a very firm believer that everybody has it. It's whether you choose to develop it or you just leave it. Because
yes.
It does scare some people when they see things or they know things and all of a sudden it happens. And so a lot of people tend to back off and go, I don't want to do that, I don't want to do that. You know,
yes.
And then a lot of other people will use religion as a reason why we're so evil when we do that, which I just kind of look at them and smile. It's like, well, okay, you know, don't argue with them. It's like that's your belief and I have mine.
Yes.
But I think that everybody is capable. You also go ahead.
Excuse me. Would you like me to tell you a very short story about a strange thing that happened in my experience that I guess you'd have to say was due to psychic awareness?
Of course.
When I was a sales rep for my last 30 years of my life, and obviously I used to have to make appointments to see people, and on one particular day, my first call was at a customer where I had to make the call pretty short because I had to meet my sales manager in a hotel in that area, you see. So I thought, right, I'll arrange this appointment very early. Let's say, for argument's sake, I arranged it for 9:30, which is more than likely. And I had to meet my manager at 10:15, you see. So I'm thinking to myself, I'm never very long in this place because the guy who runs it is busy running it and he hasn't got too much time for me, you see. So the night before I went, I had a dream that I was in his office. And I was sitting there, and I was looking at the clock, and I thought, crikey, I'm not going to get out in time. And I didn't know why I was held up, but I couldn't get out of his office in time. So when I'm going to this place in the morning, I'm thinking to myself, well, there's no way that I'm going to be delayed, because I've allowed myself plenty of time, you see. So I go in there, and I see his wife, who's acting like a receptionist, and she says, yes, take a seat, please. He's in the yard at the moment doing some work. And while I was sitting there, she came in and told me, she said, sorry, she said, he can't come in straight away. There's been an accident in the yard. One of his men had driven a forklift down to the end of it, and he turned it round, and his forks went out into the road, and he hit a car that was coming by, you see. So you obviously know what I'm going to say. In the end, by the time he came back, I was too late to meet my boss at the time which was appointed. I thought, well, there you are. It was precognition, and yet I couldn't do anything about it. So what do you make of that?
Yeah, it's the and again, it happens to a lot of people, but they take it in their head and they try to make it logical and go, oh, it's just a coincidence. Oh, you know, it could happen at any time. But that's not really the way it is. It really is kind of predetermined a lot of times, I think.
Oh, yes. I mean, you might not call that a psychic experience, but it's these type of things that are outside of what you normally expect, aren't they?
Right. You know, people have different experiences all the time through dreams or, you know, knowing something in advance. Like you said, the phone. What happens with me is people cross my mind, and within a week I get a phone call from them. And they can be from any place in the world. It's really funny, and it's like, I wonder what they're doing, and all of a sudden I get a call, and it's like, oh, well, that's what it was, you know.
Yes, yeah.
So that happens all the time. Mike, can you, again, do me a favor. I mean, we've gone over, but can you give out your website and the way people can get a hold of you?
Yes. Well, the website, again, is www.treeofthegoldenlight.com, and I always have to look this up. If people want to get hold of me, my email address is michael.quinsey. I think that's clear how you spell Michael, and Quinsey is Q-U-I-N-S-E-Y, at my post office, that's all one word, mypostoffice.co.uk. But clearly, if you're on the internet and you somehow mishear that or can't find me, just put my name in on the internet and the website address will come up anyway.
It's great. Now,
you won't get my email. Sorry?
Are you going to be coming to the United States anytime soon to do any lectures or anything?
well, there's nothing planned, and I don't know. I don't expect to. See, I'm not really giving talks now, so I'm not one really who would be roped in because I'm already, say, doing tours and workshops, etc., etc. So I don't think so. I mean, I can only envisage people getting invited over to the States if they are perhaps a specialist on some subject, and their presence is pretty important. See, this medium of the internet is wonderful, isn't it? You don't have to go anywhere.
You don't have to go anyplace. But it would be nice to see you in person. And if you decide that sometime you might like to come to the United States and do some form of a workshop, please let me know, because we'll get it out or get it going for you.
Very kind of you, yes. You know, I'm getting on a bit now for going gallivanting around, but I'm extremely healthy for my age, so... but there, if we haven't got long to organise it. I mean, I expect next year to be a tremendous year of activity. Goodness knows how far we will have gone by this time next year. You see, things have to start very soon, because even if, say, people had to go right through to the end of 2012, I mean, the end of that period goes up to the equinox, December the 21st. Now, that is supposed to be the cut-off point of the cycle of duality, when the new energy coming in is going to be so powerful there will be a lift up. I have to say, I tend to think that one factor in that might be because we are entering the photon energy, and it's a very, very powerful energy, and the more the solar system moves into it, we pass through it, the more it's going to cause changes to take place. So all these things are quite definite. There's no doubts about ascension. I mean, it is a definite thing. The only qualification I would make is space people emphasize that we are creating our own reality even as individuals. So, for example, religious people that look forward, strangely enough, to the apocalypse do so because they're told that that will come, it will cleanse the earth of the sort of evil people, leaving the godly ones, and that's their ticket, if you like, to heaven. So they see that as a means of achieving their own lift up. What do they call it? The that special word for it slipped my mind now. So if millions of people are thinking like that, although it sounds weird to think that they can experience it a different way, that they are in fact trying to create that reality for themselves. The rapture, is that what they call it? Have you heard that? The rapture, that's it. I've got the word now. Yes.
Yeah. I would really like you to think about maybe coming here to New Mexico to do like a workshop or something sometime during 2010. And we'll talk about that when we're not on, you know, on the radio show, and I'll get back in touch with you, or we'll send emails to each other. I think it would be a lot of fun. I think you'd have a really good time and see all the support that you actually have here in the United States if you came on over.
Well, I'd never turn anything down without looking at it first, because I always believe if people are doing things like that and they want you to take a part in it, you should seriously consider it. But, I mean, Mexico is a wonderful country, that is to be very receptive to the idea of spacecraft, and I think that's why some of these multi-sightings, I mean, they've had sightings of literally a few hundred craft at the time, is carried out there, because the people actually go out and they look up to them, and they're happy to see them. And also the government is very receptive to it.
Well, I think you should think about that, Mike. I'd like to bring you over here and do a little workshop of some sort. So, you know, we'll talk about that, okay?
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, I'll consider anything, yes. Yes, fine. Thank you for thinking of me.
Yeah, I think that would be a lot of fun, and I think it would be very enlightening, and I really think you'd see a lot of supporters who came here, and I think it would be good. So we'll have to talk about that, because I'm really serious about it. I just did David Icke, and it went over really well, so I think bringing you in would go over just as well.
Right. Can you send a spacecraft to pick me up?
Well, you know, it's really funny, Mike. I live in New Mexico, down by Las Lunas, and my backyard are mountains.
Yeah.
And I'm always looking up at the sky because there's so many different things that are going on. And I know that I've seen a few UFOs here and there, but I can't, you know, say, oh, yeah, it was on this date or that date. But outside my bedroom window, because I'm on like a 2.5-story home, when I look out for the mountains, I see the most fascinating things. I mean, there's this one bright light that is there almost every single night, and it never moves, but it changes colors. And I don't have a telescope to check it. So my thing is to buy a telescope so I can check this out. Now, on the other side of the mountain, there is a military base of some sort.
Yeah.
It's called Kirkland. I think it's Kirkland Air Force Base. So there's a lot of things going on, and I don't know if they're doing experiments or what it may be. But one night when I was looking, not this normal star or planet or whatever, UFO, whatever it is, but closer to where the Air Force Base is, there was this huge light just above the mountain. And this is like at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. That's why I'm up. And it's shooting off red beams. And I thought, man, that's really cool. What is it? But I didn't have anything to really look at it. So I'm going to go get this telescope so I can see what's going on over by these mountains, because it's very, very interesting here at night.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, it is said that the U.S. military has a couple of hundred of spacecrafts now. Apparently, they haven't built those which are interstellar craft, and apparently the Galactic Federation won't allow them to go out of this system anyway. But there you are. So it's quite possible you're actually seeing some of our craft, yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so every night I'm looking out because here the skies are nice and bright with stars and all kinds of interesting things going on around the mountain. So I think let me bring you out here. But anyway, Mike, we've talked for an hour and a half, and I know you've been pretty busy, so I would like to thank you for being on my show. It has been such a pleasure having you on.
Well, it's wonderful for you to invite me, and I really enjoy a discussion like this because there aren't too many people that you can talk about these subjects for about an hour and a half, so there we are. Yes, thank you very much, Nancy.
We should have gone on for a lot more time, believe me, but I know that you're very busy. And I mentioned what were you going to say?
No, that's fine. I was just saying thank you very much. Nothing more really to add, but I hope what you and I have discussed is perhaps helpful to a lot of people listening in.
What's going to happen is that he's going to play this again tonight, you know, by normal hours. People will actually get to hear it. And I don't know if you get to play the whole thing, but we'll have to have you on again, and we'll talk more because I just really love talking openly about all this stuff, because it's time for it to be opened up and not be so closed. So I really appreciate you taking the time to, you know, talk with me and, you know, give me some of your some of the things that you've done and your beliefs. I find it very fascinating.
Good. Well, it's very enjoyable, and thank you again, and I'd be delighted to join you again at some later date. Yes.
All right. That sounds great. I will make sure that. But I do want you to think about coming here, okay?
Well, you send me some details when something sort of tangible is available, and I'll certainly look at it, yes.
I will probably get you something out within the week, okay?
Okay,
so that you can look
there
and take a good look, all right? Again, thank you very much, Mike, for taking the time and this wonderful conversation that we have. I'm sure everybody tonight will enjoy our conversations. And just keep up what you're doing, and, you know, don't be afraid to let people know, okay?
Thank you again. Thank you.
You're very welcome. You take care. Bye now.
Bye.